Remember, we've got two items on the agenda for meeting today. One is the adoption of minutes. Secondly, the decision by the department on ACA. So we start with the minutes of the committee. To my mind, members, the minutes are the minutes of the sessions, which is last Wednesday. Unless there are corrections, to me these minutes are straightforward minutes because we were just adopting those minutes, if you remember that day. Is there any issue that we would like to raise? But I just want the committee secretary to note that if members are alternate to the committee, they don't have to be put as absent. Because alternate members, we only come to the committee per invitation. So they don't look for the subject as absent. The alternate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two grammatical corrections on page 2. 1A, they have a briefing on Tuesday, delete the word "the". And the third bullet point, place an advert. Just grammatical corrections, Chairperson. 1A on page 2, the first bullet point, they have a briefing on Tuesday, you delete the word "the" Tuesday. Well, I'm saying it's just grammatical corrections, Chairperson. And then just the third bullet point, take an advert in the national newspaper.
All right. Is there any issue with that? Yes. Can we then move for adjustment the minute? Thank you, members. Can you dispense with that item? Okay. Members, it's what is term the draft frozen before you. That is how we're going to deal with the issue. So we agree that we follow that format. Because we all know that the bill before us was to meet the deadline, the required deadline. I know you had numbers to confirm the meeting last week. But can we leave with our proposal so that at the end of the day, there are any changes, we accommodate them in the process of voting. So in principle, we agree that the program is changed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know you make mention of the amendment or the proposals made last week, and the previous week you yourself indicated that this program doesn't allow, for example, presentation from the budget, which is going to happen tomorrow. So this takes up all the committee time up until this day.
Yes. Unless we have extraordinary time, you must remember that our priority is this one. What we are going to do, the reason why we didn't put any deliberations on the budget as such, is that we would like to get a committee program as to when is how the impacticular is supposed to be debating on the budget itself. So as soon as we get that program from Parliament, it's in terms of the different things of different departments, and then we will accommodate that. We discussed that and we found that presently, because we don't know whether we're going to be May or June or whatever, let's wait, let's finish on both. But we take your concern, we definitely incorporate it here. Thank you. Members, should we dispense with this process? Then let's then allow the DG to introduce the members of the department and go straight to the bill. Do we all have copies of the bill before us? Because we can't deliver it if we don't have the bill before us. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that you have the bill. Yes, and then over to you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. With me is DDG Abatu. Mr. Fletcher, Director Fletcher, who will be making presentation on our behalf, SDBG Mbani, and Dr. Chidareke, who is the Chief Director in my office. I forgot the name. And Mr. Quincy, who is also with the Fletcher Development Party. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. What we have done is we have made a presentation on the bill which is published, I think you have in front of you, by the government printer, and we have taken your concerns.
Senator, before you speak, I forgot, you cannot speak in business as usual. While this morning we saw on TV the evictions and stuff. I think briefly you should reflect on that. We know that you don't have the full picture, but in the near future we'd like an engagement with the department on the matter. Okay. This morning. Okay.
Well, Chair, sometimes in December, when the contractors moved off-site, closing as it were for holidays, a local councillor in Delft issued letters to the residents who are purportedly the backyarders or people who are renting from other people's properties. To occupy about 1,200 houses in that area, and he issued his letter in his capacity as a councillor, not on behalf of the council of the municipality, and people started occupying those houses. We then tried to have them evicted there and there, but unfortunately the eviction order that we were using, the court found it to be lacking in many respects, and the judge decided that it should start all over again and launch a new application, which we successfully did, and on the 7th of this month a judgment was passed that that gave the province and the National Department of Housing to evict those people. However, the judge felt it necessary to give the residents some time until the 17th, on Sunday, to voluntarily vacate those houses. There have been some problems of properties being destroyed in some instances or defaced as it were. However, we could not do much about that because people were still under the protection of the courts. On Friday last week, the anti-eviction team and the community there launched put a motion before the court, trying to ask the court to allow them the need to appeal, and that request of theirs was turned down yesterday. As a result, we therefore decided that the eviction should start today. We started with the operation this morning, which is very successful, and I'm pointing out, Chairperson, that many people, or some of the people in that area, did leave the area voluntarily. But I think, in the whole, what is really at issue here are the allegations that have been made by the local councillor, Mr. Martin, that there is corruption in the allocation of houses, and that Tribalisha has been drawn into this process. And I think it is important that I should just indicate to this honorable committee that expenditure is not responsible for the allocation of houses. There is an allocation committee that consists of the officials of the municipality as well as the province, who, because allocation by this nature, it's a political matter, it's a matter that needs an institution, a government institution, so you cannot outsource that process to a company like Venetia. So as soon as houses are complete, or are completed, the allocation committee meets and they give to Venetia names of people who want to occupy those houses. So there was, there is this allegation that there is corruption in this process, but where we stand, we don't see any corruption. We think this is a very transparent process, a process that is based on the database that is there with the city as well as the province. Secondly, there is an allegation that the arrangement that was done at the inception of the project to give 70% access or allocation to people who live in the informal settlement and 30% for those who are backyarders, that there has never been such a decision. But we do have documents to prove that this has been a matter that was decided upon by the M3, municipality, the province, and national department. So it is really one of the basis of the, you know, the fundamental basis of the M2. And I think in their own wisdom, the M3 felt at that time, which is still correct today, that there are the number of people who live in informal settlement is increasing, and obviously the government approach in housing really is to create to allow different tenure options. One of those options is the renter, and if somebody is renting, it's a tenure option that they have, and obviously one of the tenure options is to create, to build houses and give those houses to the people. So there is a contestation on that matter. But I think the ugly side of all of this, Chairperson, is that this has been turned into a racial slur, which is quite unfortunate, because in their own wisdom, the M3, the city, the province, at the inception of the project, they did not have a racial base for allocation of houses. But we think this is just a diversion exercise for those who stand to gain political out of this process. We have already asked the MEC to interact with the premier, I mean with the mayor on this matter, because in our view, a councillor who incited people to occupy this house did this in his capacity as a councillor. And therefore, what he did does have a bearing on his standing as a public representative. You don't have to have public representatives inciting violence or lawlessness. That cannot be tolerated. So we have asked the mayor and the MEC to raise the matter with the mayor, and we hope that the city of council will consider the matter and sanction the councillor accordingly. That will be the brief, that's why, Chairperson. We are going to, the process of eviction is taking place. It has been very successful thus far. There hasn't been any violence. There has been a great degree of cooperation between the occupiers and the law enforcement agencies. And we are also going to make sure that we take names of those people so that we run them through our system, because they allege that they are in the system, just to run them through our system to check whether indeed they are qualifying beneficiaries. And as we move ahead with the construction of houses in that area, obviously we will also make sure that they too get accommodated. This is a caring government. Nobody should be feel excluded in the process of you know acquiring a house. So there is some work that has been done in the past, the province, to pay particular attention to that. As the movement of those housing shelters, and the question was whether are we going to provide alternative accommodation. Our stance is clearly no. You don't get involved in an illegal act and therefore demand the rights using that. We think they have been residing somewhere and therefore they must go back from where they come from. Interestingly, just to note, is that all of them did not bring their finishers to those houses. So they left their finishers from wherever they were, because they knew very well that this is illegal. So they only have the mattresses and a few blankets and so forth. So I think we are correct not to provide an alternative accommodation and ask them to go back. But obviously they will benefit as we go ahead with how we program in that area. Thank you.
Members, I'm going to open it very quickly because you must remember this is not on our agenda, but it's part of business unusual of the president. Because it's not just that situation without touching it as a community. What is happening on our own? Ma, what, I'll give one all of you, then I stop it there.
Thank you, Mr. President. Still says we are not standing. We can take our belongings out of our taking them there because we were only working for 14 years. That's what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Yes, I understand.
Thanks, Julia. Thanks to the CEO for the briefing update. But I think I would agree with you for what you just said, Chair. We can't really get into a discussion now. And I would suggest that we have a more informed discussion. We can make some time, perhaps in the next week or two. But that can also just update us as well on how we're going to speed up. But I do want to just say that I think we do need to get some sort of feedback quite urgently as to what steps are going to be taken against this particular councillor. Because I agree with the DG. It is absolutely unacceptable for anybody, for that matter, to rally people to invade and to illegally occupy premises and buildings that are not there. So I think there we need to get something quite urgent.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also just like to say that certainly we do not condone anybody breaking the law. And if there's a rogue councillor that has done this, then the law must take its course and the council must discipline in whatever manner they see fit if it is proven that yes, he's in fact done that. I have no information on that. It's not my constituency, so I wouldn't know. Just one question from what the CG said, Chairperson. And he indicated that he wasn't sure if the 70-30% allocation is in fact valid. So I would just like him to respond to that, because as far as I'm concerned, the minister did in fact announce that it used to be, I think, 80-20, and then she made it 70-30 when certain objections were made. But DG seems to indicate that it's not valid at all. So if you could just explain that.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I won't go on this. Council ask people to debate in the house. Because I remember once in a councillor, there was a councillor who just asked for a person to be given just a day or 2 days, and that council was immediately evicted from the city council. I don't know why there's this one still in the city council. But I also come to the point which was just raised about the city and the city protect. I've been attending a lot of meetings with the province and even the minister, which they promised people 30% will be backyards. And even the backyarders of Cape Town wanted 50% because they say there's, and I am witness that they've been staying in backyard for over 40 years. You know, Cape Town was a dumping, area. For the Kukulese, especially Kukulese and Yanga, people jump. So many people have been staying there for 40, they are staying, even in one house, over 10 families are staying there. So that's a clarification. Also, why is it now, there's no space. And that happened, we have been stopping people for years when we invaded. They wanted to get land, and one day we had to get the police to help us. And after that, those people apologized to us. They saw those people were community organization, not knowing what people outside instigated them to go and occupy the land.
Okay. I just want to say, members, that we should remember that as a committee we did not want this to be anything. But we're stuck to it because it is true that we're told that the policy is being taken by the council at the time. And I think you're right, it's what we have at the moment. But we wanted to make it 50-50, but unfortunately, it was decision already taken by them. Secondly, I think we should be firm as a committee, irrespective of how many years we've been on waiting list, cannot allow the situation of lawlessness. So that is in the clear. Remember, if I recall, one time I told you that when we got a person who was on the waiting list with a red card, that person has been on the waiting list since 1984. But it shows how the issue of housing is so magnitude of folks that come in the Western Cape or in any other area in any place. So that cannot justify occupation of housing at all. Secondly, lastly, I think it's critical that the councillor who instigated this matter, the public representative, and I think collectively we should say this matter cannot be left unattended to. Opportunity is going to have to be long.
Okay, just to indicate that it's fair to record that the city of Cape Town distanced itself from the actions of the councillor. Actually, it's fair to record that they did that last year. Mr. Blood, or not once, on several occasions, indicated that they are not party to this. But obviously, we would like them then to show action, because if we all agree that this is uncalled for, the public representative, even for a government official for that matter, there has got to be action. So we would like to see action. And the shall be implemented against the councillor. There is a court case, Chairperson, pending against the councillor, and I think the magistrate, which is a separate matter. It has got to do with this action, but obviously from the institution side, we also like to see action to be taken. All what I was explaining about 2013, I'm sure that this is a policy decision, it has been taken, it is been implemented. But I'm saying that the councillor there, when mobilizing people, is actually questioning that. And he sees corruption in that. But obviously, as to stands, 2030 is a plan or part and parcel of the implementation of the program. Chair, we have done some work, and I'm sure the minister will announce that at an appropriate time. Because the issue about Cape Town is not only lack of houses, it's also lack of land, the cost of land. But there is some work that has been done, and I'm sure when it's appropriate, the minister will reflect on that. But the register is a policy position that we are implementing.
How about you, Mr.
Sessions?
Thank you very much,
Lizzie.
Thank you, Chair. I'm saying that we have our presentation, which is based on the printed copy. We are aware of the concerns which this committee raised at the workshop recently. And what we have done, we have printed a separate page with the amendments which we feel should actually deal with all those concerns. Madam Chair, I don't know if you'd like to just hand that out. We do have a hard copy. And maybe to save time, if you could, is that we can go through the presentation and just point out where the amendments are. They're not all that many, so I don't think it will take too much time.
the above will only happen when municipality lacks the capacity to acquire or develop such land. Now, I think at this stage I'm assisting you because we were warned that there could be a constitutional problem if we did not allow the municipality to do their work in terms of housing access. And you'll see in the role of the agency on page 4, subsection 3, nothing in this act detracts from the power of the municipality to acquire, hold, or develop land for residential community development without recourse to the agency in terms of its powers and functions under the Housing Act. So I think, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we must always bear this in mind that the municipality will still have, municipalities still have the powers which are apportioned to them in terms of the Housing Act. This agency is merely to go into areas where there is little or no capacity or expertise to develop the land, and the agency has as its objective to develop and release land for residential community purposes. We're leaving by agreement with municipalities out of this because they already have their powers in terms of the Housing Act. The functions and powers of the agency include the assistance to municipalities complete projects which have not been completed, and the assistance to municipalities with the upgrading of informal settlements and dealing with the upgrading of informal settlements, and dealing with emergency housing solutions. There's a bit of repetition there. I think this is very important that the agency has these specific powers because I think a lot of the work which has been done has been blocked for some reason, and we would like the agency to have the power to unblock these developments wherever they may occur. So that is the amendment to on page 4, line 2 and 3. And on page 4, line 6, after the word must, we're omitting by agreement with a municipality, which is in keeping with the previous amendment. And then on page 4, line 15, after the word agency, we're omitting for the purposes contemplated in subsection 1. That's also a consequential amendment. And then we dealt with clauses 1 and 2 that deal with definitions being established by the agency. And then clause 3 sets out the principal objectives which we discussed. Yes, Madam.
Could I ask if you just go through the bill without the amendment first? Because it is becoming a little bit confusing. I'm not sure if the amendment is in fact already in the bill or if it's still just a proposal. And we may still change the amendment. So if we can just go through the bill, isn't it?
Yes.
And then
right, we dealt with clauses 1 to 4 and then clause 5, land which may be acquired by the agency. Land registered or vested in the state or any organ of the state, and which state is prepared to dispose of for residential community development purposes.
Please do it.
Yes.
One is only.
That's the one I'm reading from.
But you tell me where you are.
Sorry. It's the next page, I think, because you can just. Yes, land is going to be acquired by agency. And that is land registered or vested in the state or in the organ of state, and with the state prepared to dispose of for extension. Yes, page 4. Right, we can go on to the next page if everyone is happy with that. This is page 4, clause 5 of the bill. Okay. And
And then we dealt with expropriation, also in clause 5. And we said that land and private ownership of expropriation is necessary. The provisions of section 6 to 23 of the Expropriation Act 1975 apply for the changes required by the context. I think that is requested, which is wrong. It should be required. Yes? So that's in clause 5(c) of the bill, for 2 and 3, sub 2 and sub 3. And then going on to the functions of the agency, which is clause 6 on page 4. The agency may, if contracted thereto, by municipality, develop strategic plans with regard to the identification and acquisition of suitable land. We have found in practice that there are some municipalities which might have, well have plans for the identification of certain areas of land, but they are not suitable for human settlement. In other words, they might be far from community halls or clinics or schools and that sort of thing. So we are trying to emphasize that community development, sustainable communities that we are striving to achieve. And secondly, find, acquire, develop and release such land for residential community development. Prepare the necessary documentation for consideration and approval of the municipality. And we find that many municipalities just do not have the expertise or knowledge to prepare this documentation. Generally, undertake such project management services as may be necessary, and assist municipalities in dealing with housing developments that have not been completed. We've dealt with that briefly before. And finally, assist municipalities with the upgrading of informal settlements and in respect of emergency housing solutions. Madam Chair, I've gone through this fairly briefly. We will obviously refer back to it with the amendments later on. And then next we have the mandate, which is clause 7 of the bill. The Minister must conclude a written mandate of the agency, and such mandate must document the operational and performance indicators against which the performance of the agency is measured. Secondly, contain specific delivery targets. Thirdly, contain directions regarding the utilization of any surplus revenue. Fourthly, be reviewed at least every 5 years. And finally, not be in conflict with the Act. So, Madam Chair, what we are trying to achieve there is that this agency will not be a loose cannon. In other words, it will have to have performance indicators and targets, and there will be definitely a strict monitoring of these targets so that the agency achieves what it has agreed to achieve at the outset. And this will be done in consultation with our minister, who will definitely keep a close watch on on the mandate of the agency. And then the clause 8 is the next one, which concerns the governing board. This governing board and the way that we set up the agency was not as it was originally drafted. We've had extensive consultations with National Treasury, and we agree with them now that the best vehicle for this agency would be not a company, because they are phasing out companies. It will be a statutory body, and it will be governed by a governing board consisting of 2 executive members and 7 non-executive members. And then 2 of those members must be designated by the Minister of Public Works and of Land Affairs, respectively. And the third member must be designated by the Minister of Provincial and Local Government. And the chairperson and deputy chairperson will be appointed by the minister. And the general functions of the board and matters relating to the board members are set out in clauses, I think, 9 to 15 of the bill. And these clauses contain standard provisions for such a body. and I'm not going to list all those. They are in the bill. The next, we've gone to some extent to some considerable discussions were on the chief executive officer and the chief financial officer, and the conditions of appointment of the CEO and CFO, together with the functions of these two posts, are set out in clauses 16 to 22 of the bill. We have tried to be specific here so that there are no grey areas when it comes to what each officer that the CEO and the CFO should be doing. And next, a very important part is the staff of the agency. I think we'll have to go back one slide, okay. Appointments of commissioners for this year together with the appointment, right, at clause 11. I'm sorry, but I see now there's a mistake here. The CFO should read CEO to determine the staff, establishment, and necessary, all that necessary to enable the agency to perform its functions. And we've also made a provision that the members of the staff become members of the government employee pension fund. This was also a point which was raised by several parties. And we've also made provision that staff may be transferred or seconded to the agency from the public service, subject to provisions of the Public Services Act 1994. And obviously we hear referring to Tbilisi and Servcom, because all the expertise lie in those two companies in prison, and they will be, or are in prison, one of them anyway, I think are being phased out. And then the funds and financial provisions, this is also something which is really a standard clause in this type of bill, and they dealt with in clauses 24 and 25 of the bill. And we made provision that the agency is to prepare such reports as may be required under the Public Finance Management Act, and the minister must table the agency's annual report in Parliament. I think that is extremely important, so that this committee and others can see the progress or lack thereof of this agency as it progresses. And then I think also importantly, we provided that in certain circumstances, set out in clause 30, the minister may intervene if he or she is satisfied that the agency is in difficulty or in default of its obligation. What we're trying to avoid is a situation where the agency collapses for whatever reason, and we feel that the minister must have the power to intervene to prevent any further losses to the agency and or the state. And then, clause 14 refers to regulations and the dissolution. The minister must, after consultation with the agency and the Minister of Public Service Administration, make regulations regarding the matters set out in clause 31. And the agency may not be placed under judicial management or liquidation, except on the authority of the Act of Parliament. I think that follows that the creation of Parliament can only be dissolved by Parliament, and we have a very good precedent there. That's the Eisenhower Trust Limited Act, which this committee dealt with some time ago. Clause 15, limitation of liability and offences and penalties. Neither the agency nor any employee thereof is liable for any loss or damage caused by the exercise of the power or the failure thereof, or the performance of a duty under the Act, unless the Act was unlawful, grossly negligent, or in bad faith. And clause 36 makes provision for the certain offences and penalties under the Act, and in terms thereof, a person is liable to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years of both such fine and imprisonment. And finally, the title and commencement Act comes into effect on a date determined by the President by proclamation and the Gazette. I don't know if you want me to take questions now or after we've dealt with the amendments, which aren't all that many. We really just want to get more teeth to the bill as discussed at the workshop.
Clarity in terms of what the committee is before you. I think that it's straightforward. Mr. Chen? Thank you, Chairperson. When we had our informal briefing on this, Chairperson, the committee raised the question about the necessity of such a body in terms of existing structures and whether it could not be integrated or a department within the current National Department of Housing be initiated to do exactly what this agency is supposed to be doing. I would like to raise that query again, Chairperson, because we have not had an answer, obviously. We just had the briefing as to the political process. So the query that we raised as a committee, I believe, still exists, and I'd like an answer on that. And then if I make this very quickly, Chairperson, if you look at the background and you look at the what the agency is supposed to do, it appears to focus and emphasize the acquisition of land. It's almost a secondary function where they will assist municipalities with implementation of projects. And I'd like to know if my reading of that is correct, Chairperson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think just largely in line with Dane's question now about the core function of this agency. There's quite a lot of emphasis on the fact that it's servicing land, etc. But then it also talks about developing land, etc. I just want to get some more clarity as to exactly what we see this thing doing. Because I suspect that its primary role will eventually become of actually developing. Because it goes on to talk about, it's not just, because if I look at all of it, it's not just about purchasing land and the leasing of land. It's actually about developing and building and construction, if I'm not mistaken. So I just want to get clarity on that. Then it's just around the just some clarity really around the board and so on. Is this board are these full-time positions? Are they funded positions? There's nothing really said in the bill yet about the board that's going to be put together. Just some clarity on that. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you. I think mine is also about this on page 5. On the money. I would like to know if this development agency is going to be established at a national level and then be extended on the provincial level. The structure, or what would be the structure? Because as the Honorable Schneeman has said, I think most of the municipalities have got their development agencies in their area. What would be the future of those development agencies? And secondly, I think even on the issue of developing the structures for this agency, I think there's always also going to be a problem because those development agencies in the local municipalities, they do the upper development of houses. So I want to know. So secondly, the last one is about on page 4, subsection 2, where it relates that the minister may, where in the municipality, lack the capacity to acquire codes and so on. But now my question is around who's going to determine that the municipality hasn't got the capacity and how is it going to determine? The reason why I'm asking this question, most of the municipalities currently, they do not have the capacity, but they deny. So how is it going to work out?
Thank you. Also,
thank you.
I heard in your presentation that you are silent about the role of how to do it. At the end of the day, you also make sure that at the end of the day, because this is a question of it's important to find mechanisms of incorporating that in the sense of the, I don't know how, but there has been lessons in other people's mission that kind of education, where that kind of scenario comes up. I don't have an answer at the moment or a proposal at the moment, but I'm just saying, simply decide. Okay, but can we allow you to deal with the method of members to say two?
Well, yes, Chair, in the informal workshop, indeed, the question arose. Why this agency, why can't we migrate this function in a department? I think that was the matter that was, the question that was posed and it was still in that stage. The current chairperson, the organization of the state and all departments and the execution of tasks tend to be, you tend to have many spreadsheets in the process. You don't have the speed that will ordinarily require. Where you want to do some of this type of work. I remember I was making an example about a private developer who purchased a portion of land and who wants the EIA to be conducted and or that led to the interdisciplinary process. I felt at that stage, ordinarily, because money counts, and I mean, time is money for a private sector. A private sector person will make sure that despite the lengthy processes that are there, they follow up consistently without the failure. I said at that stage, Chairperson, that there were instances where such a private developer can submit a document to this office and make sure that every time they follow up. Whereas in the public sector, normally what you see is that a messenger is sent with a bundle of papers to the deep office. And there is no follow-up, there is no conscious follow up to make sure that within reasonable time a decision is taken on the matter. Now I think if you take that example, you will then understand why SARNA, for instance, was established to be an agency that manages national roads. It is precisely because of that. And of course, in the case of SARNA, what happened is that the entire chief directorate of national transport or roads was migrated into SANDRA. And I think the examples of SANDRA, many other such agencies, including SANDRA, are there for everybody to see that indeed, where there is that space, you know, people get to be focused and make sure that things happen. The agency is intended to acquire land, but at the same time, the agency is expected to help to turn the raw land into a cooked land, as it were, for residential people. Now, a classical example here in Chile would be in a municipality, like in Mpumalanga, where my colleagues have been, because they've been visiting provinces to check the state of their readiness for the next financial year. You find that the municipality says, well, you do have land, but you know, you don't have personnel to help to turn this raw land into to prepare it for human settlement purposes. So the agency must be able to acquire land, must also be able to help to develop that land, put infrastructure and so forth, and allow developers to develop that land. Now, we are looking at a possibility of the agency also bringing on board the private sector in the development, something that is very difficult in the public sector to ordinarily do. So if you have a portion of land well suitable for housing, and because we are talking about integrated human settlement, it should be possible for the agency to acquire that land, to develop that land in partnership with the private sector, in a classical and I think simplistic way, to say to a private sector, look, you want this portion for light industry. We will we'll put this portion aside for you for light industry. But jointly, we are going to put money into the bank, and so forth, you know. So you then have a private sector investing in making sure that that land that is suitable, it is actually beneficial to the people who are going to occupy it as residents, over and above them being residents. So then the ability to get extra funding from private sector for us is very key. So hence we feel that the agency route is appropriate, but then they have got to be that ability to be a developer. Both have been decided to include other departments, of course, because of their strategic location in the housing or human settlement value chain. The Department of Land Affairs obviously does have enough land, manages land on behalf of the state, and can also help to expedite the processes either in this office, but also of identification of that land. We are also saying that primarily the agency must also be able to acquire land from the state entities, you know, whether it's ESCOM, whether it's Transnet, and so forth. You know, those will be primary the state agencies will be primary donors, as it were, or areas where the agency will source land. So those would be my comments at this stage, but I think Chairperson, we can't overstate the need to have this. Our experiences for the last 13 years or so does indicate that the capacity of the state to do some of the things, because we're also competing in the built environment and competing with the private sector, it is not adequate. The Honourable Member is correct to say that when she asked the question as to who is going to determine whether a municipality has the capacity or not, the truth of the matter is that many municipalities don't have that capacity. And many municipalities have one official who is in the office of the CFO who's responsible for housing. And many municipalities don't have civil engineers or planners. So those are the realities. The province allocates private houses, and then it becomes a problem as to how do you go forward. Hence you get some houses built without toilets or bath infrastructure. And when you get in some areas, you find houses being built without proper this register being opened and so forth. So we want the agency to be able to cut through, to short-circuit the process, to run, to be the runner of the state as a whole in the implementation of housing development. Do you want to take other questions, colleagues?
Yes, I think Greg was asking about acquiring developing land, which I honourable member, and that clarity, you want clarity around the board and that in the funding positions. Before this agency can be established, we have to get Treasury approval, and they insist on a very comprehensive business plan, and this business plan will include all the funding arrangements, exactly what the requirements are for office space and for equipment and all those things, and the department will be budgeting for the for that agency in the form of development costs as well as running costs and salaries and that sort of thing. So we are doing this work in parallel with the bill, and the agency, the business case has reached an advanced stage. I think it's already in its third or fourth edition, and we'll make sure that the act and the business case do speak to one another. And then the third question was I think the DG has answered this about municipalities having a development agencies themselves. Well, some of them do, but a lot of them don't. And the third question consisted of a couple of parts, and the second was that in terms of the, to the minister may do certain things in the event of the agency not doing its work or getting into financial difficulties. We felt that if the agency has set targets and it has a business case with programs in it, it will be seen at an early stage whether those targets are being met or whether the funding is being spent properly. And we do have, as you know, several housing institutions, and these are monitored on a regular basis, so that we do have an early warning system if this agency should not be functioning in the way that the bill requires it to function. And there will be regulations also under this Act which will determine the details of the functioning and when it, there'll be criteria, I think, which is what we're working on at present, so that this bill will be supported by regulations. And I think that determining the failure will be done by experts. It won't be the minister who says, I don't like the way this agency is operating. She will be receiving regular reports, and the members of the department we have in the new structure set up divisions which will certainly look at this institution as well as others. And the last question I'd just like to talk on is the chairperson wants to know how this is going to fit into or what will Parliament's role be in this. And I think that we must look at other institutions which are statutory bodies like the NHBRC that functions in a similar way. It has a board, and I do believe that your committee is in reasonably regular contact with the directors of the NHBRC, and this is what I think will happen in this as well, that you will have access to this agency if there are any queries. You might, for instance, receive reports from some municipality about things not happening as they should, and if the agency is involved, well then they are accountable to the minister and to Parliament, so Parliament will have a role to play in seeing that this agency does fulfil its full mandate. Chair, I don't know if I've missed out anything or any further questions. Thank you.
This came followed by Dambuza, Mr. Schneeman, and Comrade. That's order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to come back to my very first question and the DG's answer. The DG actually gave us an example of why there should be a separate agency. And the example he gave was that there's a lot of red tape, but a private entity will, through follow-up, shorten the period. Whereas a public entity, they will not do that. Now, surely, Chairperson, I still query the necessity for a separate agency. And based on his example, and it's a pity that he has left, I mean, the obvious answer is that those state employees should then get off their backside with respect and then follow up. If that is the sort of difference between the agency and a private enterprise.
And in any case, this agency will end up being a public entity as well. So we may very well have the same situation that arise there. But assuming that this agency does get off the ground, Chairperson, we've asked it before, with the current fuel shortage, how is this agency necessarily going to attract the necessary skills to be the power that's going to solve the problems of every municipality and every housing project and etc.? Are we not creating a structure here that's going to be top heavy with employees, and then we're going to find that consultants at great cost is going to do the donkey work to in fact make this a reality? And just lastly, Chairperson, there's a bit of an anomaly. Look at the bill. On page 4, the role of the agency. It says the agency must, by agreement with the municipality, and I'm talking to clause 4, acquire available state land, which has been identified. Then clause 5.4 says the agency may not acquire any land which, at the commencement of this act, is registered in the name of a province, or a municipality, or a provincial public entity. So it just seems to be contradicting each other. Certainly after the act they can do it, but at the commencement of this act. Now I would imagine that most of the available land is in the name of some state entity already. Chair, one last thing, strict monitoring and keeping close watch. Mr. Fetcher spoke at length and he mentioned it quite a few times. Now, I don't know who's going to be doing that, because we've got state entities and we do know that there are problems there, and we do know that in the housing delivery as a whole, there are problems with keeping close watch, with strict monitoring. I don't know why this was given to us, Chair, but there's some, I presume every member got it. But there's daily we read about existing projects that where the houses are defective. So there's clearly a problem with the monitoring and keeping close watch. So what is going to be different about this agency as far as that's concerned? Thank you.
Thanks, Professor. Without repeating what Mr. Stein has raised, more especially on the question of monitoring mechanisms, and I think we raised those issues on our workshop. And mine is a concern from the PCA statement, because if we read this bill, it is also stated that the employees are going to be appointed in terms of the public public Service Act. So it means if the exemplar, that the example that we have been given by the DG, it means we are going to experience the same situation even with this development agency, because people are going to do the very same thing that they were doing whilst they were being employed in other government state institutions. So really, we would like to see this bill a serious one, because I think the implementation of this bill is to ensure that we fast track this housing service delivery. So we really want to see it like that. And lastly, the issue of yes, DG has indicated clearly that in this bill there are some areas that cannot be reflected because it is a bill. But in terms of the regulations, I think it must be strongly emphasized that really this bill is going to be effective. And we would like DDG, it's a message that we can carry that to the DG, that this committee would like to see those regulations before they are being approved, so that we put advice and our input on those regulations. That is our position as this committee. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I've been covered on my first question on the purchasing of land, the example that Mr. Stain has raised. But what I just want to check is the bill doesn't seem to, and it may come under regulation somewhere, etc., but it doesn't give us an indication. We're not getting a sense as to is this agency going to be devolved down to provincial, local level? Is it going to operate from one central point? Maybe we get some clarity on that, because if you take the NHBRC as an example, they have provincial offices. They don't just have one office. They have different levels. So can we just get an indication of that? But I want to then just also just go back onto the acquiring of land. How do they actually see this working? Are they going to wait? Do they wait for a municipality to contact them to say, look, we need land in a particular area? How is this going to work? I'm really trying to understand. Or do they go out themselves and actually look for land to purchase? Let me get some clarity on that. Thank you.
My question goes back to the earlier question of the establishment of the housing development agency. Yeah, I'm a bit confused. I need clarification. The main purpose of establishing housing development agency was to address the challenges that are faced by Tbilisi and housing in total, the development of housing in the country. But I do not really understand. I'm a bit confused. Mention is made of acquisition of land and developing. Now my question are the challenges that are facing Tbilisi, is it land? Is it about land or is it about the development and the other processes that are affecting development? Because if you say to me, the agency is talking more about land acquisition and development. Now, what are the other challenges? Are there any other challenges which Tbilisi was faced with that HDA is going to address? Because it's not clear to me. Secondly, the acquisition of land. We have seen it. I was listening to the news that there are other people who are residing in a piece of land and the municipality could not even buy that piece of land. They approached the Department of Land Affairs. Land Affairs could not assist. Now, how is Housing Development Agency? Are they going to override some other processes, legislative processes, in acquisition of land? Because acquiring land is a challenge in the country, we all know. Now, when is development going to take place? Because processes of acquisition of land are frustrating. And obviously, these are issues that are affecting the development of housing. So are they going to override some processes or the PG made an example earlier on of the process. Those are processes when development is already taking place. Those are not serious challenges. But there are challenges where a project cannot even start. Initial stage of a project cannot start because of processes. Now the process of transfer to the DIT office is at a later stage when the project is already running. Now, how are we going to address the processes that are there before a project is implemented? And also the issue of skilled and unskilled municipalities not capacitated. And are we saying that municipalities should be ignored because they cannot perform? Because there are other municipalities who are going to say, we are ready, we will develop our own processes and continue. Lastly, Chairperson, is the mandate. Here it says the minister may conclude a written mandate with the agency. Was there not clear mandate for Tbilisi when they were established? My fear is so many structures are being developed and we cannot pinpoint one and say this one was an excellent institution. CEFCON was there, was established. They have failed us. I'm saying they have failed because I was working at a municipality, I was exposed to many challenges. Others, Tbilisi was established, we are saying Tbilisi could not perform because of many challenges. How do we guarantee that HDA is going to overcome serious challenges that were faced by others which did not perform? Thank you, Chair.
Let me give you chance to deliberate or to respond to those questions, DDG and Mr. Sasha, and we will speak away for what after that.
Thank you. thank you, Chairperson. I will stick to answer some of the substantive questions and not the technical ones that will be answered by the by Mr. Tata and my colleagues. I think Honorable Stain has raised the issue about the current functions and some of the advantages that we seek to address by setting up these institutions. I think that he did make some examples to indicate some of the key areas we think are difficult as we have now. The truth is that currently the issue of some of the areas of inefficiencies, we might say that structurally we have all of these things, but the practically some of these things would require particular attention to be given on the basis of the requirements of a development that is being planned. It needs presence, and I think I'll come to the issue of the oversight, because I think one takes the point that has been made presently here around the challenges of oversight. But I think some of the cases require that a presence in addressing a particular issue. As indicated, Chairperson, if you look at Tubelisha today, the original mandate of Tubelisha expired because it was linked to the Servcon mandate. And the Servcon mandate expired because the portfolio was completed. Tubelisha's mandate, Tubelisha is carrying out some of the functions that are anticipated here. And by establishing the agency, and I think there are also technical institutional difficulties of Tubelisha as it stands now, because it's a Section 21 company. That makes it difficult for them to be able to deal with some of the things. I think one of the things from what DJ referred to is the need to be capable of quickly attracting the private sector participation by being able and capable of packaging the PPP arrangements that would require that would be required in terms of creating the partnership. And those PPP arrangements, unfortunately, we see require particular instrument creation of instruments that would deal with the risks that the private sector would be faced in investing. I think we also need to look at this not in isolation from the other policy pieces that the department is developing. For an example, we have the inclusionary housing program. Some of those PPPs in the inclusionary housing programs could be packaged, the initial part is packaged to cover the risks that everybody else would be faced with through different agencies, such that it uses land, in some cases, as a bargaining chip to get the right mixes between the various income categories and the contribution by the private sector. Now, the details of how those will be packaged, I'm certain, we won't have them here. But that's what we are investigating the candidate to do. If you ask Tubelisha to do that, I can tell you it's outside of their mandate and they wouldn't even be capable of dealing with it. The intention is to then wound up those two entities and migrate the real functions that are particularly given attention here in the establishment of the agency to the agency, so that the agency is capable of dealing with them. So Tubelisha and Servcon's existence is dependent on when we create this, is it because they are going to be disbanded as they currently are. I think I would presume that I'm trying to deal with the rationale for the agency, the questions relating to that. I'll come back to the issue of the oversight. We have been faced with the issue of inadequate capacity ourselves for oversight, although we did have some capacity, some small capacity, but it wasn't quite meeting the requirements of the of doing the full governance, performance, capacity oversight on these institutions. We have created a full chief directorate that will deal with that. We intend to. I think the members may have seen some of the members of that committee, of that chief directorate at the directorate level. We believe that, one, we will have reduced the number of entities, we will have created the necessary focus. We will be able to better oversee at least the performance, the governance issues relating to these institutions. If you look at this, it's a bit tighter than some of the founding documents that created those institutions and operational arrangements there. And as Chairperson correctly stated by Mr. Thatcher, the entity is subject to the oversight of Parliament because it will be an entity that reports to the Minister of Ministry of Housing. And is subject to the PFMA provisions, all of them. And I think that in that regard, the use of the new capacity that will be in place to oversee the operations will make sure that the department is able to ensure that it can enforce issues of performance on this institution and the institutions that will remain after its existence. I am not sure what some of the processes, but I think it's critical to note that we envisage the operation of this entity to make use of the instruments that exist currently. It has to interact with the planning processes that are taking place, IGP processes, the housing approval processes. That means it would have an advantage of having a much earlier capability of knowing what development is planned, and therefore, through its capability, be able to create and ensure that if there is a land acquisition problem, identify the pieces of land, interact with the players to indicate what would be the suitable pieces of land, using the integrated development planning and also the current arrangements that exist with provinces. So it's not going to operate outside of the planning regime that it is. But what we think is that it will have the focus of understanding where are plans, where and do an early assessment of where it is required. It's not going to replace municipalities that have all of those things ready. They will still continue to do. It's not meant to suddenly replace the current arrangement, but it is meant to bridge the gaps where we know underperformance currently exists, because there may well be those gaps in those municipalities where these gaps exist. I think it does have the capabilities of using expropriation as an interface here. It will be the institution that deals with the issue of negotiating the acquisition of those pieces of land which are well located. And therefore, I think we believe that there will be much better efficiency than now, because it must have the kinds of people with expertise to negotiate all of those things that require to be negotiated and put together and packaged for development of projects. Yes, I think I will have dealt with most of those things that require. You may just fill in the gap.
Thank you, Chair. I think the DDG has answered most of the problems. There was a question raised about regulations, and we will certainly, as we do in all cases now, the regulations are submitted to this committee for their comments and approval, and we will publish them for public comment as well, as we have done in the past. And I do think that a lot of the detail which this is not supposed to be a detailed piece of legislation, it's more an overarching one, but the detail will be in the regulation, and I think that will hopefully spell out quite a few of your concerns as well. And as far as the Honourable Member referred to the anomaly on page 4 regarding what exactly the role is, as far as we see it, the role of this agency is multifaceted. It doesn't just have one role of acquiring land. It is going to acquire the land, and then if there's lack of capacity or skills, it will develop it. And as the DG mentioned, DDG and the DG mentioned, there will be private, we hope to acquire a lot of private interest in the development of the land. And I think once a private institution, I think, is notorious for getting things done, because they are experts. They've had a lot of experience in this. So every development which the agency is involved with won't necessarily just be a government one. We have to have partners, and I think a partnership is always stronger than a single entity like a government department or a provincial department. Chair, I don't know if there are any other specific ones which we haven't covered, but we'll be happy to answer them.
All right. Members, I don't think we are going
to... Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I need to know to relate to the clarity that was raised actually by Honourable Stein, pertaining actually to the confusion with regard to the role of the agency, where it relates to acquire available state land, and also with regard to clause 5, subsection 4. As Honourable Members actually can see that in our proposed amendments actually to the agency bill itself, under clause 5, and number 3, we are dealing with that particular matter. To say that on page 4, line 34, to only subsection 4. I think that particular matter will be clear in the particular chart. I thank you.
Chair, I'll just try to... just something I would just want to find out. In terms of the what we perceive as going to be the functions of this agency. Now, if you look at let's take a development like a Cosmo City, or some of the developments that EPSA are now getting involved with, DevCo, they call themselves, I think it is, or even at Bosch. Is that what we see as the role of this HDA, where they would actually take that piece of land and develop it in the way that currently we're seeing, or even at Bosch being developed, or a Cosmo City developed, or a NG Gateway being developed? Is that the correct perception of what this housing development agency is? I just want to try and understand. Thanks.
Maybe also, I can also add another confusion to or spin a tweet. When this issue of housing development agency was muted, one of the things which were considered was the question of economies of scale. And I think the idea was given the 42 billion that's supposed to be coming from the financial institutions, which has not been utilized to our understanding. One of the reasons for that is the absence of the agency to ensure it absorbs that kind of pressure from those institutions. We thought we were going to talk more about the issue of economies of scale in terms of housing delivery. And it's not coming up from this deal. What is coming up very clearly is the issue of rapid land relief, which is fine. But the fact that it has to assist municipalities in unblocking the block projects, seems as if you will be dealing with the massive problems that are there in terms of the municipalities. But the entry point that the agent itself was required at the earlier stages was the fact that the housing delivery at this stage is not as massive as it's supposed to be. And the kind of absence of skills into doing that was the thinking that the agency would say we'll have under one umbrella housing expertise from different sectors of the economy that we're able to give that particular injection in terms of the housing delivery. But in terms of the drafting of the bill and the culture of the bill, that is not coming out. That is the kind of concern that we're having. Perhaps when we look at the bill properly ourselves, we'll be saying, maybe in terms of shaping the bill so that it can serve the people that it's intended to, A, B, and C should be included. But at the moment, it's just about solving all the problem of housing. It's about getting the land, helping municipalities to think. Because in our understanding at the moment, one of the weaknesses that we have is the fact that the similar people who support the defendant to this agency, their work ethics are zero, in some extent. So that has not been dealt with in terms of saying that we have people in the agency who would be able to deal with the issues differently. I don't know. To be really sure, it's very big under question at the moment as we speak because of the capacity itself. There's a huge amount of money has been given by the government to Malaysia. At the moment, whether Malaysia is delivered on the mandate, it's a big question mark. If then the agency is destined to absorb both Malaysia and Servcon, we're going to solve the problem of housing. That's what we're talking about. Members, maybe I want to urge you to allow pressure after this process, Mr. Chair, after this process, to get us onto the amendment. But we'll come back to discuss the ambit of the bill at a later stage.
Chair, I'm still not convinced, quite honestly, that we actually need this agency. Now, I want to put this question to the department, and I've listened to the CDG when he tried to explain this. The fact of the matter is, if there are certain pieces of legislation or red tape currently within the Department of Housing that prevent them from carrying out some of the activities that this agency will be doing, we hopefully are sometime this year going to amend the Housing Act. Can those bottlenecks not be addressed there? Because the DDG, for example, said that this agency will have to be aware of the projects that are taking place, of the problems in the municipalities, of all sorts of things, which the national department at the moment should be the ideal institution that should be aware of these things, because they distribute the money, they get monthly reports from all the municipalities, all the provinces, in terms of what is being done, which means they will in turn have to pass this information on to the agency again. We're creating, my fear is, because I haven't heard of some of the functions that the national department may very well be carrying out at the moment, that's going to be passed on to this agency, that is going to disappear from the department. My fear, Chairperson, is that it's going to become more expensive to deliver housing, because we're creating overheads with another agency that will, in all likelihood, be top-heavy, and from what I hear in terms of acquiring the skills, we'll have to pay a lot of money for those skills. In addition to what is out there already, what is being spent by the department and the provinces and municipalities. So is there somewhere going to be a trade-off so that we don't, it doesn't actually cost more per individual house at the end of the day? Thank you.
Thank you.
I must say I don't support the sentiment that there is no need for the agency. But the question is, what type of agency do we need?
I think there is room to discuss perhaps some of the areas that may have to be prioritized as key areas of intervention. Because from an objective perspective, a goal perspective, the goal is to assist with the acceleration of housing. Probably that will need to be captured either in the preamble or under the very objective of the Act. But I think those are the things I think the committee is assisting us with in trying to, because it's there in the volume, motivation, rationale, it's the acceleration of housing delivery. And therefore, I think that issue of the economies of scale articulation needs to be there. I do get a sense, and I understand the concerns of the members that have been raised, where you use current experience to then say you want to be sure that what is intended is actually achieved. and therefore there must be a difference, in a very significant difference in their approach and how these agents would operate. I would really urge the members in this regard, as we will try to motivate for it on the basis that we understand. But in fact, this discussion may assist us in sharpening those areas of, and focusing ourselves to those key areas that we need in the region. I don't think that there is. I think currently, given the policy environment, given the choices that need to be done, that need to be, I think there's quite a lot that we need to fix in the architecture of the processes that we are using currently, that tend to lend themselves to inefficiencies and problems. I think that issue of skills, while I don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater, is a concern for everyone in South Africa generally, particularly in the construction sector, in these very core skills area. It is a concern, but I think we it is our considered opinion that properly structured, we should be able to attract those skills. Chairperson, most institutions in government, the principle for setting up institutions is that they should never exist in perpetuity. They should be able to assist in stopgapping, and then be used as a basis for resolving, from a policy perspective, the longer term issues. I'm sure the committee would want to have a look at that over time and evaluate continuously, together with the department, which is what the internal department, the continued need for the. But at the moment, there is no doubt that most of the issues around land acquisition are problematic packaging. And I think without an institutional care mechanism dedicated for that, we will lose the capability to bring the private sector to play in this regard. I guess I'm trying to make a plea for us not to evaluate the objective of the entity on the basis of the condition of currently. There was a question asked by Honorable Greg, which relates to practically what will it do. Those kinds of projects are envisaged to bring us. AFSA comes to us and says, while we may have been able to deal with Cosmos City, and it's been done over a long period of time as well, there are a number of things we think that these agents, they themselves, we had discussions with them on the agents, that they think it will help them, because very often there are a number of other projects that they want to package, but they would require that kind of partnership with the public sector to enter into. So we envisage that if with the existence of this agency, over time we will be capable of producing the Cosmos cities through a facilitated process by this entity. Sometimes after the project has reached those areas of development and construction, it will leave it to the private sector to finish and then deal with some of the earlier unblocking processes within some of the other projects that it may set up. But I think those are the kinds of things we are investigating. Again, the taste is going to be in the eating. Taste of the pudding will be in the eating. When the eating is in place, and the kind of skills that you have been able to bring. Honorable Stein, I think from a cost perspective, it is extremely difficult to know how much, if we were operating efficiently, we would be spending currently. We envisage that if you speed up much, if the entity is able to achieve the goal of accelerating housing delivery, over time, because I think the first, one of the key things that the minister and the teacher have indicated is that at best we must make sure that we create a lean and mean machine, but with adequate capacity to deal with the key critical areas. And that doesn't define the number of people that you require. But if you look at current examples such as the National Road Agency, it's not such a big entity. It is able to put together the kinds of packages that can ensure that delivery is facilitated appropriately. We're looking for that. But we also acknowledge that housing delivery is not just about being a toll gate road. It's much more complex than that. And therefore, this entity will be able to have this much resource. Thanks. Mabene, please.
Can I just respond briefly to the Honourable saying regarding the need for the agency? I think we've got to really go back a long time to 1994 when the late Minister Stover really drafted what I would call the basic plan of the department and why we had to do things the way we have done them. And you'll recall that there were seven major thrusts in that white paper of 1994. And at that time, the major intervention was finance, because the banks were afraid that they would lose money because of the non-payment, etc., etc. And the major intervention there, as you recall, was the MIF. Now, the MIF had a limited life. As you're aware, it came to an end in July 1998. And since then, we have not really had any real interventions. We did try the Community Reinvestment Housing Bill, but for various reasons, Cabinet decided not to go ahead with that. I think the main reason being that the housing, charter, the financial sector charter, would deal with the problems which we wanted to address in the Community Reinvestment Bill. As it turns out, they are still worried, that the banks, I understand, are still worried about their exposure. And I think the whole idea of, and let's face it, you know, there have not been many Cosmo cities around. And I think that this agency will be in a position to ensure that all future developments are integrated, because there are many, many programs and developments since 1994 which are totally unintegrated or disintegrated. And I think this is why we need an intervention. And which we haven't really had one since the MIF. Look, we've had other amendments to our legislation which is intended to improve the rate of delivery, but really it is the one intervention which I think hasn't come about, and we really do need it badly. That's all I have to say, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Can we please allow the statistics to go ahead with the amendment, so we can look in terms of the proposed amendment. Can we go with that? That's good. Thank you.
Can we please go to page 4 of the draft bill? Page 4, clause 3. On line 2, that is the first line of clause 3, we'd like to omit the words "by agreement with municipalities." So it will now read, "The objective of the agency is to acquire, hold, and develop and release land for residential and community purposes." We are taking out the word "and," which is on the third line, the first word before the word "develop." So it will now read, "The object of the agency is to acquire, hold, develop, and release land for residential community purposes for creation of sustainable human development." And then also on page 4, clause 4, the first line, 4.1, we want to take out the word "by agreement with the municipality," which is in clause 3. And then clause 4, line 15, we want to take out the words at the end of 2A, for the purposes contemplated in subsection 1 or. And then on page 4, line 16, to replace the word request in 2B, that's subsection or subclause 2B, instead of requesting the agency, we want to direct the agency. In other words, it's more positive, and it's mandatory, direct the agency to engage with the municipality. And then along, for the same reasons, in line 22, this is clause 5, the first line of clause 5, the agency must, and then we're taking out the word subject to subsection 4. I'll explain that later. And then coming to subsection 4, line 34, we're taking out off the word agency by agreement with trying to see, there might be a subsection 4.
Oh, angles.
I think we are a... Quincy, can you help me here? Aren't we deleting clause 4? The whole of clause 4.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I think earlier on, based on the question you have raised by the Honourable saying with regard to confusion, with regard to clause 4A, then my response to that was the fact that our proposal in terms of amendment was the fact that on page 4, line 34, we omit the whole subsection 4. That will be in response, you know, to the question that was raised by the Honourable saying in that regard. And then it was accepted in this regard. And then we will just have to go to clause 6. It's on page 4, Honourable members, line 34. To omit. Yes, subsection. To omit subsection 4. Yes, that will be subsection 4. The whole subsection 4. Yes.
I think the to the policy, then you don't need that clause because effectively contact is.
Yes, I feel that one, the other one, yeah.
Thank you, Quincy. And then the following line, which is 37, the 5 now becomes the 4, sub clause 5 is sub clause 4.
Can I ask if we just discuss these before we go any further, please?
Yes.
That's just getting this.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Maybe before we start discussion, we also thought maybe on the first clause, that is clause 3, the one that is starting with the requested amendment. Yes, the objective of the agency. We should also include, start with identify. The objective of the agency is to identify and go to the rest that is mentioned, to identify, to acquire, hold, and go on. No. The objective of the agency is to identify, to acquire, hold, develop, and release as it goes. And then, while still on that, also aid, map to land, to clarify that it should be both state and privately owned land. Still on clause 3. To read that then. The objective of the agency. Yes, we take out by agreement. Then it will read that. The objective of the agency is to identify, acquire, hold, develop, and release state and privately owned land for residential purposes for the creation of sustainable human session.
We agree, Chair, that does make sense. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, I presume we're not really adopting any of these. I just want some clarity. Yeah, I just want some clarity as to why we're omitting by agreement with municipalities.
Credit, can you answer that?
Can I answer with the permission of the department and your chair? The removal of the phrase will actually help to answer the questions that have been posed to the effect that this agency, how will it function? Will it function as a national entity or will it only work at the level where it must work with the municipalities? If we remove these by agreement with municipalities, it actually opens up the scope to say that the agency will work cross-cutting throughout all the spheres, not only focused at the municipalities as the bees currently hopes to be conveying that message. We want it to be a cross-cutting agency, not only to focus at the local level. Then the removal of those phrases will help us to at least see some light towards that.
So are we done with the thing?
So I think that then by removing it, we're actually making it broader rather than saying that there won't be any consultation.
Definitely there will be a consultation with every entity of government. But it becomes then cross-cutting for the purpose of functioning and fast-tracking the process. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. And further than that, to respond to one of the things concerned as well, it's also on 4.3, which stipulates clearly that nothing in this act detracts from the powers of municipalities to acquire and hold and develop land for residential or community development without the recourse of the agency. I think that one is very clear in the sense that it addresses that particular concern.
Let's go to close four members. Yes. I think you accept what was said here, that in terms of close four, the agency must...
Okay.
All right. And we delete by agreement, that means, sorry. Because it's finished.
Yes.
From what we have already said right now. Yes. Even here?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sure. Okay. Sure. Then we move. Further down, you have there in line 15.
Yes.
That's correction.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So we accept that.
Yes.
So can we move from clause 4 to those amendments? Doesn't mean you adopt them, but you are formalizing ourselves as members. We have our own time to deliberate. Okay, let's go then. Yes.
Can we also
tell this committee who you are?
Sorry, Chair. It's Pumela Lenyema from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Okay.
Thank you. While still on clause 4, if we can look at 4.2. There were issues raised again there as to who will determine or assess thereof the lack of the municipality. We've also looked at that, and maybe in order to avoid that glaring requirement that then who will assess there, we actually try and look around that where a municipality lacks, and also to make it conform to what we are saying, we don't only focus on municipalities or local levels, but throughout, and then you say the minister may acquire and develop land where there is a lack of capacity to acquire, and then the rest. We leave the municipality out, but say where there is a lack of capacity to acquire. On 4, clause 4, subsection 2, in order to address the issue that says who will determine that this municipality is lacking and all that assessment to get to that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, we can obviously deliberate on that when we've got the next meeting. I don't agree with that one. Because we're now saying, or the proposed amendment is that the minister may now acquire, whereas the whole purpose is that the agency will acquire. It doesn't cover the fact that the minister must identify which province or municipality or state organization is not performing. So it's something that I think we can flag and we can debate it.
Okay, let's live with it. Can I just flag it, members, something that will go by, so that even the department must look in terms of that coming up. Why should all of us have now the minister instead of the agency?
I think, Chairperson, when we do so, we must just keep in mind that some of those kinds of things are to be, and also dealt with through regulation, unless the committee determines that should not be the case, then that would be the need to amend if that's the situation.
The issue of who identify, the process for identification and all that.
Regulations will stipulate that. Okay. Can I leave with that? Yes.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that let's leave it and then we discuss later, because to me this is fine, because it's here. It's not the minister who's going to acquire, but it says the minister may, where there is lack of capacity to acquire, and then I think we have to rephrase that. This agency, what, we have to look at it, but the authority here rests upon the minister. We'll see how to.
All right. Let's go then to close five, because I think all other issues here have been covered.
Yes.
Do you agree with me, members? Greg is not to be happy. Yes.
No, Chair, it's really just clarity at this stage. But under this clause four, subsection two, it starts the minister may, and then under A, it says recommend to the municipality to consider the conclusion of an agreement. I just want to get some understanding of that. So the municipality has an option to either enter an agreement or to say no, thank you. Doesn't quite make sense to me, because then if that municipality is not functioning well, is not succeeding, then we must just recommend, and then they have the option to defy that recommendation. Doesn't make sense to me. I know we're not going into details now, but I'm just wanting to get clarity around that. I think what I'm asking is the municipality bound to adhere to the recommendation of the minister, as it says here, or are they free to say no, thank you?
Mr. Howe?
On the same note, because my concern is what Greg is trying to say is, because the agreement is omitted there. Now, President only will refer to the agreement which is omitted. Because clarity should be given a vote. Because when you go down and say, D, refer the agency and dealing with the municipality with the need to conclude an agreement contemplated in subsection 1. Now, subsection 1, by agreement, has been omitted.
Also, because in terms of synergy, trying to clean up this clause, there is two things that you have done. One, at the beginning, you have omitted an agreement with municipality. But in this clause, we're dealing with an agreement with municipality. You're speaking in tongues. So can we try and please come up with a clean job?
Chair, I'm just wondering if we can just put this beyond doubt and say the minister must, and then A, instruct or direct the municipality to conclude an agreement. Is that all right?
Thank you, Chair. With the changes, if they are accepted, that have been made on clause 4.2, it does follow then that sentence should end at sustainable human settlement, and with the above changes on clause 3, 2A and B should automatically be off. Otherwise, it will be in contradiction to the fact that we are saying on 3, nothing to track the municipality from going on business as usual. So then it follows, instead of trying to rephrase this, 2A and B should be out, because we've already also removed that it should be by agreement with only the municipality. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Yes, I think that makes lots of sense, but maybe what we need to do to give you a chance yourself and come back to us with a better proposal. Is that right?
Yes.
But take into account the agreement on clause 3. Okay, sure. Go to clause 5, members, because clause 4 has to work to be really worked out. And in clause 5, you've got your page 4, line 22, with the deletion. Not really. To omit?
Too
much. Okay, fine. We accept that. May become the must.
Okay. Then we're deleting the subject to such section 4.
As a whole. Okay, fine. So we agree with that. Let's then go to clause 6.
Are we on
5? 5 in math. Yes, let's go to 5 for your sake.
Oh, the rule is that identify only comes at 3. The agency must identify a firewall development. So are we going to continue with the overlap? We have to continue.
Yeah, the identify must come in. So, but they thought because they are listening, they will be able to clean up potential agency.
We see that, Ms. Nam. So, but thanks for bringing us to the attention. That attention to us. Let's go then to clause 6, members. Line 41. Same thing even here. All right. And the issue that members are raising to be taken into account as well. Let's then go clause 41, May and March, that follows. Fine. And then clause 31. The regulations there. line 25. Why do we omit Minister of Public Service Administration? Can it be explained? Because this is part of PSMA, so why do we omit that?
There's a reason for this amendment, and I'd like my colleagues to help me if I'm mistaken, but I think it was because that would just mean an extra step, and it would stretch out the process even further, and we feel that DPSA, the Minister of the DPSA, it wasn't necessary for her to come in.
Under that act, they are really internal procedural matters. I think probably at the initial proposal, we wanted to make sure that matters that have something to do with employment conditions and all those kinds of things are subjected with the Minister of Public Service and not just the normal governance, internal governance arrangements.
You see that? Do you agree? Okay.
okay? You don't have to disagree. You don't have to agree either. Because you'll have to come back to it. Yes, and discuss it also. Clause 32? It's obvious, okay? And similar to clause 33. Thank you, members, and just part this is process is concerned. As a way forward, the processes would be like as follows. The Laban will have public hearings scheduled for the 4th and 5th of March. Yes. So we'll have that because we must engage with the relevant stakeholders or people who want to raise issues on this agency. And I'm sure it will give an opportunity to Mr. Stain to really elaborate on this. And if the public out there agrees with him, then we'll see how best we can couch it better. But I think because it's a new piece of legislation, it will gather a lot of public interest. It's important for us to open it up for public scrutiny to allow our people to a chance to raise their voice. And then we want to finish this piece of legislation by the 19th, but it will depend entirely on how members and the respective parties respond on the matter. So the committee will allow the process to be vigorous, but at the end of the day, we would like to reach the goal of passing the legislation. Members, do you have any other things to say? So, since if we have done our business of the day. But don't leave because you still have matters of the committee to deal with. Are you still want to deliberate on this? Okay.
Check and can perhaps the department and the state law advisor's office just look at the issue that you raised, which is the participation of Parliament. Because normally regulations come to the committee as well before they get approved. So they could look at something that could be included in.
Yes. And we'd like experts of the committee legal department look in terms of the role of the committee in the process. So that we can look at in terms of other pieces of legislation that are there. And how best we can ensure that we cover that. Okay. And members, that is the end of the committee meeting, bring it to a closure. Right, you don't want to leave. But thank you for your time. Members must remain. I'm saying members of the department. What's the language? How can you keep in such a small room? Oh.